Photojournalist Eugene Richards has become the social visual commentator on contemporary American life, with an unblinking eye and a compassionate heart. So says Cornell Kappa, director of the International Center of Photography. For the past 16 years, Richards has photographed scenes of war, poverty, birth, and death for publications such as Life, the New York Times Magazine, and Geo. He recently documented the daily life of Denver General Hospital's emergency room, spending 12 to 20 hours a day for 3 months getting in words and pictures the horrors and heroes there. The result is his new book, The Knife and Gun Club. The title refers to the nickname that locals gave to the emergency room because of the number of violent injuries treated there. This was Richard's second extended visit to a hospital. For years he was in and out with his wife Dorothea Lynch, who had breast cancer. They even collaborated on the book Exploding Into Life, which documented her illness and mastectomy. She wrote the text, he took the photographs. I asked him if it was difficult to be back in the hospital after having lived through his wife's death.
Horrible for a while. It's the strange things. It's mainly the smells. Hospital smells get you in an incredible fashion, and they sort of trigger memories. And the sounds, that muffled sound in the hallways, and the sound of the gurneys going through. So it was all for a while. It was all memories, and then the place itself in Denver took over, and it was a great relief when that happened.
What kind of guidelines did you work out with the hospital staff about what you would be allowed to shoot and when you would be in the way, or when your camera would just be inappropriate?
There was a gentleman out there, Peter Rosen, who was the director at that time. He just recently left. He's very open and a wonderful guy, but he gave the guidelines that if I was totally at the mercy of the physicians and the health aides and the nurses. If I went there and I got in the way, they would throw me out. The guidelines of the hospital were that you had to get a release on each patient. Your job was totally secondary to saving people's lives. So I did. I learned to move in a way like a ballet dancer around the most important issues.
Well, if somebody's in agony and if their life is in jeopardy, how are you going to get their permission to take a photograph?
You do it afterwards. Very often, people in a great deal of pain still can see in an incredibly bright fashion. I photographed a man who was stabbed numerous times, and afterwards he survived, thank God. And I met him later, and he says, "Oh, I remember you. You're the photographer." And I said, "How the hell can you remember me, my being there?" But he sure did.
What were your own guidelines for what would be sensationalistic or voyeuristic? There's so many opportunities for that kind of thing in an emergency room. Really, most of your photographs are not of wounds, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
They're more of people's expressions than holes in their bodies.
I've got some pictures in there that I myself consider strangely borderline, and they have to be in context looked at. There's a picture of a woman. I followed a woman. It was the worst night of my life, actually, in there, in this kind of a job, and because I was rooting for this person. Usually, you try not to totally personalize the person in front of you because it's hard to work. But I did with her. I saw a tattoo on her breast, of all things. And for some, I started to put a personality together. And we spent 7 hours trying to keep this woman alive. I mean, but me as an observer. And she had been shot refusing a guy a drink in a bar. She was a waitress. And the whole night went on and on and on. And then they lost her. And I was so angry that the last photograph that I took, it's hard to say angry. I think I was sort of just, you know, kind of destroyed that I made this picture of her laying on the table. There's nothing over her, though she looks very bloated, and there's instruments all around her. Taken out of context, I think that would be a very sensational photograph. In context, it's just simply that the doctors were done, they were a little fed up, and they walked on to another patient, and someone else's job is to come in and clean the poor woman up and present it to her family.
Mm-hmm. There's a photograph of someone who had barely survived a motorcycle accident and was at this point dying. There's kind of blood and bruises all over his body and a huge seam across his entire chest.
Well, that young man didn't survive. At that moment, he was gone, and there was a minister giving him kind of
last rites.
He had, why that picture was in there also was in context, was because the prior patient was a young man who tried to take his life. And he shot himself, and this was his fourth attempt at taking his life, and the surgeon saved him. And the next patient was this young man who was 19 years old, very beautiful. I remember seeing a handsome face. And he banged himself in the chest after falling off a motorcycle, and he died. And everybody, even the doctors, very seldom show emotion, but they said, you know, there's just no justice in this. Because they knew the previous gentleman was going to go out and do it again. but they couldn't save this beautiful kid. So that picture is another one that's kind of rough, but it's meant to be because it's just tragedy.
You stopped photographing in the hospital because you were finally asked to leave.
Mm-hmm.
How come?
There was a political change out there. Ostensibly, it came as a result of one of my photographs that was run, fully captioned, actually, in a magazine concerning photography. And the question in the article was about journalistic ethics, whether American magazines run tougher stories than European ones. And as an illustration, they ran that big picture of the woman dead on the table that I described. And Denver picked it up, and that became a cause of the argument out there about whether or not I should be allowed in because I was portraying Denver as too tough a place. But it became in the middle of a political change, and I became kind of the first person they could get at. And I was just a photographer, just a journalist hanging out.
Was there an element of relief when you were asked to leave? And you got out, and you didn't have to go back to the emergency room the next day?
Absolutely not. I was hurt to death. I wish I could say that I really was. I was one of the few times I actually, I guess I cried. I went back to my motel room, because these were my friends. It wasn't a job anymore. These were my friends. And the thing that made it totally wonderful, despite being thrown out, is that night. I spent the whole night. People were calling me all night long. Some emergency room docs called me up. Paramedics called me up. The health aide called me up, and they all said that they thought it was, you know, kind of lousy, and that we were doing something together. And it was really, it became something awful. Became rather nice.
We've been talking about the photographs in your latest book, The Knife and Gun Club. I want to ask you about the photographs in an earlier book called Exploding into Life. And these were the photos you took of your wife, Dorothea, as she was dying of breast cancer. Was it your idea or her idea to photograph her illness? I mean, to photograph her life during her illness?
Yeah, I'd like to correct you in a sense on that, because I think our book was about her living with cancer, and that was the point of it. What Dorothea had in 1978, she came down with breast cancer, and we were looking around for material that very openly showed the nature of the disease and its treatments. And Dorothea, we couldn't find these materials, and Dorothea simply said, well, I want to, as a journalist, which she was, prepare something for other people. So we started to do this, but it became the nature of her treatments and her excitement about being alive, and that was the excitement, I think, that went through the book. The realities is that Dorothea was alive for four and a half years, and the disease came back, but she never lost that love of life. Even at the very end, actually, it's Dorothea's choice simply was that she wanted every single second, and if she had to be brought back by a machine or anything else, bring me back, because I like it so much being alive that anything I get is anything I can get.
I was just wondering, you know, women are so afraid if they have a mastectomy that they'll feel really embarrassed about their bodies, and what Dorothea had done was expose herself in front of the camera, you know, her mastectomy and her bald head when she was going through radiation treatments. Did she think it was important to do that so other people would know?
She did this as time went on. It was a learning experience for her. This wasn't something, she wasn't a totally exceptional person. As a matter of fact, she was very conscious of the fact that she didn't want to come across as this. What she did is she went out with her bald head initially, and she bought a wig. The wig became uncomfortable. Then she realized that she was kind of, because she was realizing a growing strength in herself, that she was kind of proud of her bald head. And that's why the wig was thrown away. In terms of showing the breast scars, as she did in one of the photographs, that was actually a reaction to what a doctor said to her. There was a physician, a number of people came in, psychologists, and they said, well, you have to prepare you, because one of the problems that you may have is a lot of women with one breast or both breasts removed suffer from the fact that they may feel like less a woman. And I remember that day very clearly, because Dorothea started laughing, not to be disrespectful to the doctor, but she thought that was the most foolish thing she ever heard. She honestly did. And the doctor got very upset. And she says, you know, I mean, her words were, she says, you know, these little tits of mine are not the thing that make me what I am. And it was really true. And of course, the doctors backed off. And that's why I made the photograph. To make that point that she's laying there, there's a breast scar, but it didn't make her any less beautiful.
Mm-hmm. How often do you look back at those pictures?
I'm looking at them right now again, because I'm trying to have the book published. It was published, you may not know, as a kind of photographic book. by a publisher, Aperture, which was the only people who would do the book. After I went, brought it to 35, 40 publishers, and they said, no, a book on breast cancer, of course not. Then it was published as a visual book, and now in the audience, it never reached it. It went on the stands, on those photographic stands, and women did find it because we have hosts of letters from people, especially people with cancer, which has been wonderful. But I would like to produce it now as a paperback. I'm doing it myself so that I can simply, maybe, hopefully, give it away to women's organizations and to health organizations, etc., where it really belongs.
Mm. Do you find yourself having a different emotional response to the photographs than you did a couple of years ago?
Now it's been, since I lost Dorothy, it's been almost 6 years, astoundingly, and my response has cooled off. I can actually talk about them like I'm talking to you now, but I couldn't have done that a few years ago. I actually hid behind, I've got a tape of Dorothy speaking through her piece, and that I could show it in that respect. But there's too many memories.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks very much, too.